Yo, good morning. Welcome to the Stochastic.com MLB Strategy Show right here on the Stochastic YouTube channel. A little seven-game action today. Dave Locker and Greg Ehrenberg hanging out with you, breaking it all down. Talk pitchers, talk stacks, take your questions, look at the Sims, lineup generator, all that good stuff. Of course, we've already got the top stacks tool, top pitchers tool, all of that pulled up with a Coors Field game today. A handful of totals, as a matter of fact, north of five. I'm looking at four of them right now out of the 14 teams going today. But the big spot, Greg, and we'll get into this in a second, but San Diego going up against Austin Gomber is just going to be the chalk spot of today for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, I put up a free betting video every day on the Odd Chopper channel, which is one pick. It's like a 50-second video, and that was the top bet on the board today too. So like you said, we're going to talk more about stacks as we go here, and the San Diego Padres at Coors Field is going to pop up a ton, but then also Austin Gomber under 3.5 strikeouts. That was the top bet on the board in Odd Chopper this morning.
By the way, how bad could the White Sox actually be? I mean, this team has already decided that they're just going to run out minor leaguers, and we're in April. I mean, this could get to the point where you're talking about I'm not going to say a 30-win season, but like they're 3-18 or something right now. I mean, this team is disastrously bad. And they've succumbed to the notion that there's no fixing this. They're 3-18. Yeah, they're 3-18 right now in the bottom of the AL Central. Twins not far ahead of them. But, I mean, this is terrible.
Yeah, it's not great. And on top of that, too, because my brother's really into baseball cards and he gives me updates. They also apparently have one of the worst farm systems in baseball, which I don't even know how that's possible.
Have you seen the Astros record?
Yeah, it's been not great so far. They're 7-15 now or something.
7-16.
Yeah,
they have a worse record than the Oakland A's.
Yeah, their offense has been no good. Their pitching is terrible. Everybody's hurt. It's been a problem.
Yeah, Hunter Brown's been a problem. But a lot of it's weird. Now it's funny because if you were to take a snapshot of this right now and then look at it in September, everything's going to look wildly different. It always does. But some of these teams are just bad, and they're going to be bad. The Rockies going up against Dylan Cease today. I'm really, really interested to get your thoughts on Dylan Cease. Might actually just be a good spot to start. Before we do, though, take one single second. Atone for your sins on a Monday morning. Hopefully you guys had a great weekend. I know I did. Hopefully you did as well, Greg. And tone for your sins. Hit that thumbs up. Subscribe to the channel. Help us get to 100K. Leave a comment down below if you're listening or watching it after the fact. And as always, everything's out there in podcast form. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever archaic podcast you may listen on. It's out there. Amazingly so. So if you don't want to listen on YouTube, we got you covered. Anyway, I want to start with Dylan Cease. And then we can talk about this. Only because, you know, some people have a true aversion to playing pitchers in Coors Field, and I get it. But the Rockies have a 4.6 implied total today. It's not that high. And Dylan Cease's ownership, amazingly, like, have you seen his ownership right now?
Yeah, it's a 42%.
And I know pitching on this slate leaves a lot to be desired. Gomber, Brady Singer against Toronto. We get into that. Ryan Weathers, Jonathan Cannon, Bryce Elder, Jose Quintana, Brandon Pfaadt, Chris Paddock, Keaton Wynn, Lance Lynn, Yusei Kikuchi, Albert Suarez getting 22%, Reed Detmers against Baltimore getting 36% with the strikeout upside. Highest owned pitcher on a seven gamer with 40%+ ownership is Dylan Cease in Colorado. Now, let me just say, like, disclaimer here, he's a good pitcher. And I like Dylan Cease tonight. I still, if I were to just look at his name and not the rest of the pitcher pool, I would have been like, oh, this might be a great leverage spot. But it turns out, because it's so weak at the position, that he has minus 16% leverage in the top pitcher tool.
Yeah, so if you guys are playing cash games today, you're still playing Dylan Cease. And honestly, in tournaments, you're playing him as well. He's my most rostered pitcher. It's just even him being my most rostered pitcher at the moment has me underweight to the field because he is so popular. If he's going to be in nearly half of the field's lineups pitching in Coors Field, like, yeah, I could go out and I could play him in 33% of my lineups, which is a ton. That's way more than I ever play pitchers at Coors Field. And I'm still somewhat significantly underweight to the field on him. I definitely have hesitations to play a pitcher who's going to be in close to half of the field's lineups at Coors Field. So is he a tournament option with upside? Yeah, and the pitching options are also otherwise terrible on the slate. I just don't think I'm going to get to quite as much exposure to him as what the field has at the moment.
Yeah, I don't see it either, honestly. But it was pretty shocking to see him get that type of love today. Now, does it... Like 42%, the question doesn't become, all right, do you play Dylan Cease or do you not play Dylan Cease? Because, yeah, on the season already this year, 30% strikeout rate. He's had great strikeout stuff, 30%+ K rate in three of his last four seasons. And then last year was still sitting at 27%. These are great numbers. Strikeouts are harder to come by in Colorado. We know that. But this is just a bad Rockies team. If you're coming underweight, though, coming in underweight on Dylan Cease, what do some of the alternatives look like? Because you're not just going to go, oh, yeah, no, play whoever you want. This is a great slate. That's not the case. And behind him, Detmers is popular, almost as popular. Lance Lynn is 8,400 against Arizona. Kikuchi, 8,200 against Kansas City. That's at least interesting because he's flashed big upside, particularly at home, but big upside this year. Paddock has the White Sox at 7,400. He's 12% owned. That seems a little bit low to me.
So it's a different price range, but my favorite pitcher on this slate by far is Albert Suarez. I don't know what happened with his price because he made his major league, well, not his major league debut, but it was his first start, I think, since 2017.
Yeah, since 96.
In the big leagues last time out. He was not only the flat man, he didn't even end up being all that popular in large field tournaments. He ended up crushing on that slate, and he's the flat man on FanDuel at $5,500, the flat man on DraftKings at $4,000. And also from watching that game, because I was so invested in him, he had good stuff. A lot of it wasn't going to be sustainable because I think there was a part of him that probably viewed it as, this is my only chance to hold a big league spot. So therefore, he was 100% max effort on every single pitch he threw. But the stuff looked good. It was moving a lot. His fastball was touching nearly 100 miles per hour. And you look at today's slate, and the pitching options are shitty. He's the flat man. He's a matchup against the Angels where should be able to generate strikeouts, and he's only 21% owned. Like, that's the guy that I really gravitate towards. It's a totally different price range, but I like going super cheap, punt with Suarez as a pitcher, even on FanDuel on a single pitcher site. I think he's very much in play, and then just pay up for bats today.
I get it. The 4K is shocking because, like you said, he wasn't that popular, but at 4K, you're talking about somebody that just went, what, 5 2/3 with no earned and four strikeouts. His stuff looked good. He's got to be popular today because your alternatives don't look that great. Plus, it's a Coors Field slate. The Angels have the ninth highest K rate against righties this season. I mean, outside of Mike Trout, who really strikes fear into you with the Angels? There's no Otani anymore. What about that lineup is all that concerning at this point?
Yeah, nothing. And Rendon was actually having himself a pretty good bounce back season, but he gets hurt the other day. So it's a really, really shitty lineup. It has a lot of strikeouts in it. And you got Suarez here at the flat min project for 21% ownership on DraftKings. On FanDuel, he's projected for 8% ownership. So this is where I like to go to differentiate my pitching a little bit. And you can only get so contrarian at pitching. Jordan's got the top pitchers tool on the page here. Because you got all this ownership going to Dylan Cease and Reed Detmers. They're projected for 42 and 36% ownership. Then everybody else who's serviceable is like 10 to 20% owned. So there isn't really spots we could get to where it's like, hey, here's a 5% owned guy we like. So then when you consider that all of these other pitchers outside of Cease and Detmers are comparably owned, then I'm just picking my favorite guy for the cheapest, and that is Albert Suarez.
What about Chris Paddock at 7,400 on DraftKings? To be fair, strikeout rate looks putrid to start the year. Not good at all. 8% swinging strikes, not good. But, you know, this is a career 11% swinging strike pitcher. I will note, though, first start of the season was Milwaukee. They were crushing the laces off the ball against pretty much everyone they picked or they faced early on, right? Like, call it just running hot, unsustainable, whatever it is. We all know it was true, right? And then the Dodgers, and then at Camden Yards against the Baltimore Orioles. I mean, I'm not saying Chris Paddock is particularly good, but he's a low 7K price point against the White Sox team that, I mean, they're so bad. And I mean, it's not apples to apples here, but Wheeler just took a no-hitter into the eighth. Essentially, you know, almost any pitcher that faces him right now is racking up really strong numbers. 12% owned on him seems a little bit low. What are we getting to him in the Sims?
Yeah, so I don't get too very much of him. Not that much different in the field. Let's see what we have here. Was that 16% or 14%? It's a little hard to make out the number. Either way, it's neither here nor there. We're getting to some of him, but not really all that much. That's also how I view Chris Paddock. If he's a guy who lands in some lineups, it's okay. I don't want to have my day built around him. I actually do think Albert Suarez is a better pitcher as of right now, because Chris Paddock, coming back from injuries, he hardly pitched in 2022. Hardly pitched in 2023. He was one of the top pitching prospects in baseball when he first got called up, and he had an excellent rookie year. If you guys remember back in 2019, it was Pete Alonso was like the top hitting prospect in baseball getting called up. Chris Paddock was the top pitching prospect in baseball getting called up. And then it was this big debate about who should be the rookie of the year that year. Should it have been Chris Paddock? Should it have been Pete Alonso? And the careers have gone in such different directions since then. And nothing's looked good for Paddock since that rookie year. He's consistently gotten injured. The results haven't been there. The strikeout rate's been lower. And so far this year, like you said, not generating swing and misses. He's walking guys. He's an 8.36 ERA, an 8.9 expected ERA. And he's so far removed from having a decent season that it's really hard for me to think there's any kind of real talent here at this point. The only reason to get Chris Paddock in any lineups is because what we're talking about at the top of the show, he's going up against that terrible Chicago White Sox lineup. So that's what gets Paddock into some lineups, but not in any kind of way that I want to take a stand on him.
That's fair. I see it a little bit differently, just because I think a three-start sample against the teams that are second, third, and fourth in WRC plus against right-handed pitching this season, Baltimore second, Milwaukee third, Dodgers fourth, all three of them, top four in WRC plus against righties, in good company with the Atlanta Braves sitting atop that spot. You know, that, like, here's what I'm saying, Greg. The numbers look bad, but there's probably, the truth probably lays somewhere in the middle here. And you go from a team like Baltimore, Milwaukee, or Dodgers, who are three of the best right now against righties, objectively, right? With power, everything, power, walk rate, WRC plus, weighted on base average. And then you take the Chicago White Sox. So 131, 126, 120 WRC plus for these teams. 220 ISO, 174, 178. The White Sox, 66 WRC plus. The next worst team is a 79. So they haven't just been bad. They've been so much worse than even the worst teams in the league. So I do think there's a middle ground here, given who he's faced and who he faces tonight.
Yeah, I wish we had some minor league numbers to look at for Chris Paddock, where if he had like rehab starts or something like that, but we don't even really have that to look on. So there's just very limited data on him over the last few years. And it's all generally negative, but I would be interested to see if he had like a handful of minor league starts, like, was he able to get minor league hitters out? But we don't have that.
Yeah. I see where you're going with this. Once you get past that, you're talking Lance Lynn, mm-hmm. 8,400. We'll get to Detmers in a second. But I'd say that's a little bit more cut and dry than a guy like Lance Lynn. He's all over the map, dude. Like, last game, he gets the win against Oakland, allows one earned, goes seven innings, strikes out one. And the start before that against Philly gives up one hit, but walks four. So he's really been all over the place. I never know what to make of Lance Lynn. He's the type of guy, you know, if your day is going to be good or bad pretty early from the beginning of his start, but he's still one of the higher priced pitchers on this slate.
Yeah, I want to see what's the projected lineup today for the Cardinals and how many for the Diamondbacks and how many lefties are in it? Because Lance Lynn throughout his career has been a pitcher who really is elite against right-hand batters and then just really struggles against lefties. So
particularly with power, yeah.
So I want to see this projected lineup for Arizona. And how many lefties can we anticipate? All right, so it is going to likely be, so Ketel Marte at the top of the order, switch hitter, Corbin Carroll, lefty, Gurriel Walker, righties, Jock Peterson, that's a lefty. So what is he facing today? Likely, like half the lineup is lefties. So not too bad. If I'm just choosing which pitchers I want to roster today, I would still go with Dylan Cease and Reed Detmers over Lance Lynn, but he's like the next tier of guy.
Is Blaze Alexander in that projected lineup?
He is.
Because he left yesterday's game, so.
Yeah, unknown. He's dealing with a hamstring injury, so I'm going to say probably more likely he sits than plays. Maybe he could be a pinch hitter later in the game. But yeah, just unknown because he left with the hamstring injury yesterday.
And even if he did, Newman probably enters. He's a righty. Even if Alexander didn't start. So that's another righty. I always look at it from both directions on Lance Lynn. I like the lefties, but if it's not a super heavy, potent lefty lineup, I think Lance Lynn makes some sense as well.
I'm slightly overweight to him in the Sims tool. I get to him, what is he projected for, 17% ownership, and I have him in a quarter lineups. Looks like that's about the same as what Jordan has in the Sim that he ran there as well. So relative to his ownership, I certainly think he's worth being overweight to. Just if I had to choose, I'm going to Cease and Detmers ahead of him, and they're in the same price range.
We have to talk a little bit about Yusei Kikuchi because he's got a 33.5% K rate right now. It's not like he's getting more swinging strikes than he has before. Like that's one of the things here that I sit and look at and I go, yeah, he's been good. His called strike rate, called plus swinging strike rate is definitely higher than it's been in the past. I don't know how many called strikeouts he's getting, but he's been putting up some pretty significant numbers. He's going up against Kansas City today in Kansas City. So Kauffman Stadium definitely limits power. Well, limits home runs. He's coming off back-to-back 9 strikeout games. Seattle, New York. Dude, he's faced the Yankees in 2 of his last 3 starts, one of them at Yankee Stadium. Surely a lefty helps him a little bit. But 7-9 strikeouts against them, 9 against Seattle. He's racking them up right now.
Yeah, and for people in the chat too, just want to add, because people are saying that FanDuel has Grayson Rodriguez listed as the starter. Don't use FanDuel or DraftKings for news. There's really weird shit that'll pop up on there. And yeah, somebody also brought up like last week they had a day where Freddie Peralta was pitching and he was not listed as a starter. I think they had DJ Hall. Just don't look at it. There's no purpose to it. There's a million better places to get news from.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, where would you put Kikuchi right now, knowing that he's getting sub 20% ownership against the Kansas City Royals in a park that's really not all that unpleasant for opposing pitchers?
Yeah, so right now in the Sims, I'm about even with the field on him. I wouldn't mind, though, doing a positive ROI boost to Kikuchi and then getting a little bit more of him to pivot off of guys like Cease and Detmer. Cease more in particular at his ownership. Because Kikuchi has been really good so far this year, and his velocity is a career high, and he's always been a pitcher who's had pretty decent velocity. His rookie year notwithstanding, he had very odd velocity numbers his first year pitching in the U.S., where he had a 92.6 average mile per hour fastball, but this year, a career high 95.7 mile per hour fastball. He's a 2.08 ERA, a 2.63 expected ERA, and it's really hard to look at a pitcher's or any player's contract situation and say, this player is going better because they're in the final year of their contract. Sometimes it ends up working in the player's favor for fantasy production, where a player maybe comes into the season in better shape, but it could work the opposite way as well, where guy's in the final year of his contract. Maybe they press a little bit. They put too much pressure on themselves. So in general, it's something I don't put a lot of stock into, while also understanding that in individual cases, you can notice some differences. And I do wonder, with fastball velocity, like a noticeable career high for Kikuchi and how well he's pitched to open up the year, it's hard to not kind of look at him being in the final year of his contract, about to be a free agent, and connect the dots and say, hey, maybe this is a guy who came into the year in a little bit of better shape to try to get himself one big contract to finish out his career. He's 33 years old. This is his final chance for a payday. And also, he's somebody who was very highly touted coming over from Japan. He's been inconsistent over the course of his career, but he's looked really good so far this year. He's generating a lot of strikeouts. The matchup against the Royals is probably a little bit more difficult than we would have expected coming into the year because they've been overperforming. Bobby Witt actually is second in the MVP odds if you look at the MLB futures for award races. But yeah, I think Kikuchi is somebody who warrants a little bit of a positive ROI boost.
Agreed. And look, wind's blowing out heavy at Kauffman Stadium. That's not, I assume it's still Kauffman Stadium. That's not Wrigley Field, but it is, you know, 70 degrees with, I think, like 19 mile per hour winds blowing out to left center. But at the same time, Greg, I'm willing to look at this and go, well, yeah, but if he's missing bats, it doesn't matter as much. We talked about it early in the year. It might have been, I think it was the first game of the year with Cole Reagans, and the wind was blowing out there. And we're like, it's like, yeah, it's blowing out. And remember, there were homers in the top and bottom half of the first inning, one homer, solo shot each. And then Reagans just went on to punch out nine or something in 6 one-run innings, because you still miss bats with wind. So I'm not super concerned. It is great weather, 70 and 19. But if Kikuchi is missing bats, it's all that matters. And Kansas City only striking out at 18% against lefties this year, it's so much harder for me to look at this and glean a ton from that. 169 plate appearances. Like, that's not that much to start the year. I think there's still some strikeouts in that lineup.
Yeah, and that was going to be my follow-up question to you, is what's the sample size? Because especially at this part of the year where teams may have not seen a lot of left-handed pitching, could be like, hey, they struck out a ton against lefties, but that also might mean that it's equivalent of like five innings of plate appearances. Exactly. Or something like that. I'm looking up right now, what was their strikeout rate last year against lefties? I know it's not going to be the exact same, but just as like a starting point to kind of see what was their K rate against left-handed pitching.
I have it right here. Oh, so cool. Last year against left-handed pitching, the Royals had the ninth highest K, essentially tied with Pittsburgh for eighth, 24% K rate, 1,500 plate appearances, and a 7% walk rate against lefties, which was third lowest in baseball.
Yeah, if I had to guess where the Royals finished the year, it's probably going to be somewhere in the middle of the road in terms of K rate against lefties.
Agreed. Yeah, I don't think this matchup is as bad as it looks if you were to just pull up their 169 plate appearances versus Southpaws this year. Probably middle of the road. And you know what? Kikuchi's been good enough in tough spots this year where I'd be willing to take a shot. When you put an ROI boost on that, like, you're not necessarily boosting it to get exact amounts. Like, how much would you boost somebody like Kikuchi in the Sims tool? I know it's still early, but generally speaking, when you're doing something like this, what's your approach?
Yeah, so it's more of a feel sort of thing, but I would be trying to boost Kikuchi just to get him around 30% ownership. So okay. I think in the Sim Jordan has on screen, we've got like 18% of Kikuchi or something like that. So I'd start with like a 15% ROI boost and then see what that ends up changing his exposure to. And then I would just kind of tweak it around until I got to him around like the 30% mark, which is what I'm looking for.
By the way, speaking of Sims, today is the last day. The last day of the NBA playoff Sims promo. You're getting a week of the Sims, first week, half off, 50% off immediately from the top. Just look at that beautifully ugly Nikola Jokic picture. I still boggles my mind that we could do that to him with the strong neck beard coming down. Either way, 50% off. That's NBA contest generator, NBA Sims. Also, the post lineup simulator is a huge tool that you should be using each day after contact or the next morning. Ownership projections, player projections, boom bust tool, premium Discord, the lineup generator is included as well. It's the Sims Max monthly or weekly. Sorry, Sims Max weekly. That means everything on the site for basketball. And the contests are still massive. They're not going anywhere anytime soon. Today, $100,000 up top. They continue to be bigger than baseball. So as much as we love baseball, 50% off going into the postseason, only 2 days in so far. Today marks the third day of the playoffs. Last day to get it. Links in the description if you're looking to do it, or the link is in the pin in the comments where Jordan is in there throwing it in chat. And also, Greg, you have all of the tutorials. Mm-hmm. The one for NBA, I think you did with Steve, right? Did you do one with Steve for NBA?
No, the NBA one I just did by myself.
Football was with Steve.
Correct.
But yeah, the tutorials, it's such an easy tool to use, The Sims. And you can, like you said, you can make ROI boosts. You can do a lot of different things with this. Whether it's in the contest generator, you can use your own projections and ownership too, however you want to do it, but you don't have to. Like, you can run an unadulterated Sims run and still get great results. And we've seen that, you know, with basketball, with football, with baseball. So 50% off. Today's the last day. If you haven't jumped in and you were waiting, sitting on the sidelines, on the fence, here's your opportunity. Last day, 50% off. Anyway, we got to talk about a few other pitchers, then we'll get into stacks here. Mm-hmm. Cease, Lynn, Kikuchi, we talked about them. Chris Paddock, Suarez. We don't need to get into like Austin Gomber or Cannon. Are there any other guys? Let's put it simply. Any other guys you think we can just write off that we don't really need to talk about here?
I mean, there's a lot of guys that I have like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5% exposure to, and it's pretty much all the pitchers we haven't talked about so far.
Okay, so that makes sense. What about though? Brandon fought against St. Louis. What about Quintana against San Francisco in San Francisco and Keaton Wynn against the Mets? Do you have any priority there, or are these kind of guys that just get sprinkled in as a product of the slate?
Yeah, they're all guys that I have less than 10% exposure to. So not players who I'm like, oh my God, I can't have them in lineups, but it's guys that are just going to show up across my portfolio and it has no real priorities.
In my Sims run, I have 1, 2, 3 guys above 30% and then 5 above 20. Lance Lynn is at 20. Kikuchi's at 23. Suarez, 31%. Dylan Cease, 37. And Reed Detmers at 45%. Let's close out pitchers on Reed Detmers here because he's getting ownership, but I'm still getting over the field on him right now. And I think this is really just a product outside of anything else of 1, weak pitching, and 2, he has good strikeout stuff. Because it's not exactly like he's going up against a bad team. You know, you're facing the Baltimore Orioles today in a park that since the renovations, however many years ago, has actually become pretty hitter friendly, but he's striking guys out at 35%. He can punch out both lefties and righties. This is strictly just an upside play.
Yeah, it's a couple things. Number one, you're betting on young pitching talent while also just comparing him to the other pitchers on the slate, which are generally terrible. So I get why the field is getting there, but I think this is another reasonable way where we could differentiate some of our exposure where Cease and Detmers are likely going to wind up being my two most rostered pitchers on the slate. But ideally, I would like to be underweight to the field on both of them and instead get to guys like Albert Suarez and really end up going to him heavily, get a little bit overweight to field on somebody like Yusei Kikuchi, because the matchups are so hard the matchup itself isn't hard for Dylan Cease, just the fact that he's pitching at Coors Field, but the matchup is very difficult for Reed Detmers. Great results so far this year, 1.19 ERA, 2.53 expected ERA. He has a 35% K rate. It's something we've seen him gradually get better at over the course of his career. First year, 19% K rate, then 22.6%, 26% this year, 35%. So there are definite improvements being made by Detmers. I'm just not all that comfortable jamming him into a crazy amount of lineups, which you're going to get him in like half your lineups or so if you just run the Sims unencumbered right now. I'd rather be a little bit lighter on that just because the matchup is so difficult against the Orioles.
Yeah, it is. But my God, dude, he's striking righties out at 34.5%, lefties out at 36.5%. He's just straight mowing dudes down. And, you know, one of the issues that Detmers encountered last year, you know, was he wasn't efficient with his pitches. Like, you'd be getting out of the fourth inning and you go, oh, God, he's got 8 strikeouts, but he's thrown 88 pitches. Like, we'll be lucky to get through 5. And it's not totally different this year, but it looks a little bit better. You know, pitches per plate appearance, pitches per inning, doesn't look all that bad. He's gone 5 innings plus and 4, 6 innings plus and 2 of 4. Faced Baltimore already, 5 in, innings pitch, 1 earned with 7 Ks. Boston, Tampa Bay. He hasn't had the easiest matchups either, and he's still getting those strikeouts. So at the price point at 8,500, I'll just say I totally understand why Detmers is as popular as he is, because he shouldn't be 8,500 even in this matchup if Dylan Cease is 8,700 in Colorado and Brady Singer's $9,200 against the Blue Jays.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to be a pitcher who winds up in a good amount of my lineups kind of by default. But I don't know at 36% ownership that I'm ultimately going to end up being where the field is at or way above on Detmers.
For sure. All right. Let's talk stacks. Jordan's got the Sims run. Stack exposure. 5-man stacks. San Diego, Toronto, and Minnesota. My 3 highest owned. Now, let me point out that combined 5-4 and 3-man stacks in this initial Sims run, it's looking like I'm getting around 53% San Diego stacks right now in total.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things going into this. Most importantly, they're playing at Coors Field. They have a good matchup against Austin Gomber. For whatever reason, the Rockies have a pitching staff of entirely guys that pitch to contact, which is a disaster for Coors Field. But then also, because of how cheap the pitchers are on the slate that we just went over, Lofty, the most expensive pitcher on DraftKings, it's Dylan Cease at $8,700. The pricing's kind of broken on this slate because you can
build Brady Singer, but you're not
with
playing
whatever
Brady
pitcher
Singer.
You want.
Sorry, Brady Singer is the most expensive, but you're not playing him at $9,200.
Yeah. Yeah, correct. Yeah, my bad. Brady Singer is $9,200 on DraftKings. He's more reasonably priced than $9,100 on FanDuel, relatively considering the pricing is softer on FanDuel. But yeah, you're right. Brady Singer is more expensive than Cease. But either way, because of what the pricing is, the Padres, you could stack them and play whoever you want in pitching. So they're going to be crazy popular. But on the flip side, even as popular as they are, we got them projected for 16.5% ownership. They are way under-owned relative to our odds of them being the top overall scoring team.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And again, San Diego has a few expensive bats up top, but they're not that expensive overall, right? Like if you're running 5-man San Diego stacks, Tatis is real expensive. Machado's up there as well. Bogarts is 5K, but for Coors, that's not crazy. Look at everybody else, $4,500 and cheaper. For Coors Field, that's not that great. I've noticed at Coors Field, and maybe it's just a product of what teams have been there this year, but it feels like on DraftKings, Coors Field pricing has been softer this year than in seasons past so far.
Yeah, well, big reason for it is because the Rockies used to always be crazy expensive at Coors Field, and they're so shitty now that that's just not the case. So at least half of the game is going to be cheaper just for that reason. But to your point, even some of the road teams have been cheaper as of late. We saw the Seattle Mariners in games that they played in Colorado. I'm kind of interested here. I'm going to plug in Detmers, Cease, and then all of the most expensive hitters on the Padres and see what kind of leftover salary that gets us.
While you do that, thinking about Colorado on the other side, is there any merit to stacking the Rockies today? Because it's still wild that you look at this in the top stack tool, you sort by top stack percentage, you know, the likelihood that they're going to be the top stack on the slate. And Colorado is ninth among 14 teams. Understandably, it's not a good matchup. 5% top stack probability, 2.6% ownership. Sure, they're positively leveraged, but yeah, this team has gotten so bad. A few years ago, even if they were facing a good pitcher, Colorado would still be a pretty popular stack today. Now, despite playing at home in Colorado, they're just an afterthought.
Yeah, I do think that they make sense as a leverage stack, totally pending on how much ownership there is on Dylan Cease as we get to lock, because there's no reason to roster the Rockies for the most part just as a standalone team. But if Dylan Cease is going to be still close to 50% owned at lock, then yeah, I would like some Rockies stacks as potential leverage. And also just following up from before, if you put your starting pitchers as Detmers and Cease and you play the five most expensive hitters in the Padres lineup, you have two outfield spots and a catcher spot left. You have $2,500 in average remaining salary to spend. Catcher, easy spot to punt out. Outfield, there's always value options. You could very easily build lineups with Cease and Detmers, five-man Padre sack. That is going to be so incredibly popular as a build today.
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, and then also people are going to go Detmers and Suarez or Cease and Suarez, and they're going to get that five-man, and then they're going to be able to pay up for an additional two positions outside of that. So, like, okay, what batters did you stack from San Diego?
So it was Cronenworth, Bogarts, Machado, Ha-Sung Kim, Fernando Tatis.
Okay, if you go Detmers and Suarez with that those five, you have over $4,000 remaining for catcher and two outfield.
Let's see, yeah, it is
4,033 remaining. Yeah. You know, one of the other spots though. And we talk about San Diego, going to be popular. What about Atlanta against Weathers? Because they have one of the higher totals on the slate, right? You look at team totals, you can find that anywhere, but in the top stacks tool, it's all ordered. San Diego at 6.5. Atlanta's at 5.7 in Atlanta today. It's not like you're getting bad weather. It's not hot like it generally is in Atlanta, but it's, you know, mid-60s and sunny. And they're going up against Weathers, who, you know, I with a 5.7 run total, I think it kind of says all it needs to. He's been good, but he's also facing a good offense. He's a left-handed pitcher going up against a slew of talented righties. Obviously, Albies on the IL doesn't help. They're expensive, though, like Acuna, Olsen, Riley. This team is way, even without Albies, this team is way more expensive than the San Diego Padres, way more.
And that's the main reason why they are the most negatively leveraged stack team that we have on the entire slate. It's their ownership is kind of comparable to the Padres, 12.5% compared to 16%. But their odds being the top scoring team, it's 10% as opposed to 21%. So then you've got this team, like you said, is also more expensive. So they look fairly overowned at the moment. I hardly get to any Atlanta Braves stacks in the Sims.
Yeah, it is kind of crazy, though, because if you go Detmers and Suarez and you five-man stack the five most expensive Braves, and then say you just punt catcher, like you just punt catcher down to, I'll find the 2K guy. Or I'm sorry, no, because I have Travis d'Arnaud in there. But you still have 3,300 remaining for second base, shortstop, and an outfield spot.
Yeah. Because of how cheap the pitching is, you could get to any stack, but still, the Braves are just a team that doesn't rate out all that well, and they're very, very popular.
Toronto is actually our second highest stack score today behind Colorado.
Yeah, so you have a team in the Blue Jays who have less ownership than the Braves, a comparable top stack score also being a lot cheaper. So they're one of the teams that are going to show up in a whole bunch of lineups at first run here. You had mentioned the exposures you were getting to where it's Padres stacks, Twin stacks, Blue Jays. Those are the teams that you're going to wind up getting the bulk of your exposures to. And I also think that does make a good amount of sense. If you are looking at the Blue Jays, they do have a matchup against Brady Singer where, you know, Brady Singer has a very odd price point on DraftKings and on FanDuel, you know, a little bit more fair, but still it's more expensive than what he should be. because Brady Singer, while he is off to a good start this year, there's nothing in his previous seasons of data that suggests he's going to be not just as good as he's been so far this year, but even good at all this season. Last year, he had a 5.52 ERA, a 4.96 expected ERA. It's a tough matchup for him against the Toronto Blue Jays. I don't know that I like Toronto quite as much as the Sims and the Top Stacks tool do, but I do like them better than, say, like the Braves right now.
Minnesota, to me, might be the most interesting one out there because they're getting some ownership, but not a crazy amount. I think they're like fifth in ownership right now. They're right there with Baltimore and Arizona. They're going up against Jonathan Cannon. And on one hand, the downside is like Lewis, Correa on the IL. Kepler's expected back today, though, so he should slot back into the starting lineup against, you know, a righty who knows if you're going to get anything good out of this guy. His first start against Kansas City was solid, but doesn't really mean much. But on the other hand, you're talking about a Twins team that they're dirt cheap. Like, I mean, they are extremely cheap when you start to consider who's on the IL. It's so easy to get to whatever you want if you went like Dylan Cease, Detmers, and then a 5-3, maybe Twins Padres stack or something like that.
Yeah, the Twins are, maybe I'm not as surprised they aren't picking up a ton of ownership. It's a good matchup for them against Jonathan Cannon, but the salary savings aren't totally necessary today at offense. So maybe that's part of the reason why the field isn't quite getting there. But yeah, I think it's a reasonable team to be overweight to the field too, especially if you do need to save some salary with a secondary stack. Maybe you don't need the salary savings in a five-man stack, but I do assume I'm going to get to a lot of the Twins as secondary stacks as well as one-offs when I do need to save salary.
Couple other spots here. I'll let you close it out for us before we go. Just any other stacks you want to talk about. I think we hit on a lot. But before we do, if you're not on Underdog yet, dude, what are you doing? The draft's coming up, Greg. The NFL draft is this week. I know I'll be doing it, but I'm hoping you'll be dabbling in a little best ball, early best ball contests over at Underdog. I hope.
That might be basketball, baseball going on. It's hard for me to also invest myself in football, especially when I know, I don't know, maybe three players in the draft. If I thought harder, I could probably come away with more. Like I know some Ohio State players because my sister's going to be graduating from there last week. So I watched a lot of the Ohio State football games, but I don't know how relevant most of them are for the draft. I know like a few of the quarterbacks because they get talked about a lot online, but that's a little bit too early for me in best ball. I understand very popular, though, and there's a bunch of free squares that I'll add Underdog as well.
Oh, yeah, Underdog has the pick'em contest as well. Like, that's what a lot of you guys would be doing. It's $100 first match deposit bonus, instant bonus, right? So whatever you put in up to $100, you get doubled. Usually always have a free square if you're a new user. But for me, like, my best teams were the teams that I drafted early because I was just taking shots on guys like Tank Dell and a lot of these rookie receivers that ended up having nice seasons. Jaden Reed came on real strong, had some big games. People just didn't want to touch him, and they were going to the Renfros and those type of guys. And then the preseason rolls around. Tank Dell looked good. He gets steamed. I stopped drafting him. I'm getting him in like the 18th round of these drafts on DraftKings Best Ball. I'm getting him in the 20th round as my final pick. That's what makes the strategy so fun about this, is going spots that people may feel uncomfortable with, taking shots late on some of these young guys, these rookies, or maybe second-year players that had bad slumps, guys in new situations. I'll stop. You guys don't want to hear me talk about this. But the best ball stuff is awesome. For baseball, for basketball, they have the daily drafts and best ball. Football, they have a million things, massive $3 million prize pools, and pick them every single day. You can mix as many sports as you want. So if you're not there yet, link to the in the description and chat gets you that $100 first match instant bonus over on Underdog. I guarantee you'll love it. Like, we'll be shooting the shit about this into the summer, into the season when it comes to best ball for sure. All right, Greg, wrap us up here. Any other stacks, any other pitchers, any other builds you want to hit on before we go?
Yeah, probably my favorite leverage stack on the slate. If I had to build lineups right now and if I was playing in single entry, this team I would be stacking is the Baltimore Orioles. Reed Detmers is going to be crazy popular today. He's a very difficult matchup against the Baltimore Orioles, and this is an offense with a lot of upside. And when we saw Reed Detmers struggle last year, it was generally by giving up home runs. So not saying I'm not going to be playing Reed Detmers, because I am. It's very difficult to get away from him, but I'm going to be overweight to the Orioles as a stack, and particularly for single entry, where I assume the Orioles are going to be like 2% owned as a team, and then Reed Detmers is probably going to be 50 to 60% owned. That's a very interesting way to get different than the field. So that's the lower owned stack that I think is the most leverage.
Hey, appreciate you guys hanging out as always. Live before lock tonight, NBA deeper dive, or live before lock as well. Again, last day to get the playoff promo, 50% off your first week. Just straight off the top, you're paying 50% of the original price. And it's the last day, link down in the description chat for that. You have questions, hit us up. Greg's DMs are open, mine are open. You have questions once you're in, hit us up in Discord, whatever it may be. But that's everything on the site for basketball. Playoffs, big contest, and hopefully we see you over there. If not, we'll see you back here tonight on YouTube, maybe on Twitter. We'll see you back for the next one tomorrow, probably 11 a.m. Peace.